Welcome to the Texarkana Business Journal on KTXK Think Radio. The Texarkana Business Journal is a monthly production of KTXK and Tex-America Center in Texarkana, promoting and highlighting the business environment in the Texarkana area, and serves to highlight individuals who make Texarkana a vibrant community. Your hosts are Bill Cork and Steve Mitchell. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to this month's edition of the Texarkana Business Journal. I'm Steve Mitchell, along with my co-host, Bill Cork, who is the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce in Texarkana. He has recently moved from his old job at Red River and now takes over that post, but will continue as my co-host on this program each month. Last month, Bill, first of all, welcome to you. Hope everybody had a good vacation.
It's great. I know we've had a little bit of gap between our last show and this show, but both you and I had some wonderful summer vacations. We're anxious to be back on the air with our
listeners. You were in New Orleans. I was in Panama City.
That's right. We went to New Orleans, enjoyed a little bit of the fine food, and then we went over to the beach at Biloxi and got a little sunburn. So enjoyed it.
Last month, we talked with the two new directors out at, or the new director and his new assistant out at Red River, and that was Scott Norton, whose brother is going to be on with us today, and Eric Voiles with the Tex-America Center, discussing the future of that organization. And there is some news out there that we can talk about today, and it looks like that the Tex-America Center continues to expand with a lot of good things going on.
You know, they really are. Great team out there. Mr. Scott Norton, the new CEO, Eric Voiles, their Executive Vice President, Chief Economic Development Officer. Great, exciting new prospects coming, a lot in the pipeline for them. And we hope that our listeners will go back and listen to the archive of that interview with those gentlemen, which you can find at texarkanabusinessjournal.org, or you can go to ktxk.org and pick that up and listen to it.
And, of course, all of our shows are there, and you've got there's some interesting topics that I think you could find there on several different things. One of the things that we do each month is look at the business as a role and unemployment in the area. And we were discussing this before we began the taping, Bill. The unemployment rate went up in the latest statistics, but there's a pretty good reason for that, and we should see that come back down in subsequent months.
Well, you know, we usually see a summer bump in unemployment, largely because we have a huge educational footprint in the area. And so you'll see a lot of the school faculty that are part-time will hit the unemployment rolls for the summer. So we usually see that kind of bump. We've also seen some retirements and some challenges out at Red River late in the spring, early summer. So we're seeing lagging employment indicators from that. But all indications are that they're back into a hiring mode again, especially with their contractor force. So we should start to see improving trends. But the May unemployment figures were 6.1% unemployment for the Texarkana MSA. That bumped up to 7.5%, but all indications are we'll see that drop again, Steve.
Well, you see a lot of that. As you look at the breakdown, you had a 300 loss in education and health services. A lot of that is because it's summer vacation for schools. You always see that drop during that time of year. And, of course, you said the government jobs just now showing up, but that should tick back up as we get into the fall and winter, especially out at Red River.
That's right. The government sector reported a loss of 700 jobs in our metropolitan statistical area for the month of June, but again, we see that ticking back.
On this month's edition of the Texarkana Business Journal, we're going to be talking about back to school with two superintendents from TISD and Pleasant Grove Independent School District, some new programs and state regulations. But before we get started, let's talk about some other major headlines that are continuing, and it includes Bill Cork's new position with the Texarkana Chamber of Commerce. And it says here in my notes that you're going to continue to do this show until further notice.
Well,
I thought it was interesting.
That's right. Actually,
am I the one that notices, or what? I mean, you know.
Well, we do have to stare at each other during these interviews. But as maybe our listeners don't know, that this radio broadcast is actually a partnership between Texarkana College and the Tex-America Center. And so when I worked at Tex-America Center, of course, we help support the radio broadcast and the production therein. But it looks like they're going to keep me around to help out with the radio show and also to promote local business in our region. And so I'm really excited about continuing to work with you, Steve, and to really showcase some of the great business opportunities and the players that make business headlines in our region.
There are several things going on. And, of course, your job is so unique because you've got to try to appease two cities in two states and help everybody get along. And so how's that going so far?
Well, I have to say I've really been greeted very well there. My first set of meetings over the last couple weeks have been mostly with the Arkansas side. I've met with their county judge, the mayors, city managers, state-wide elected officials, their economic development people, and really well received. Of course, most of my established relationships are on the Texas side, but you know, what we've discussed is that business is really agnostic. These arbitrary political boundaries are not really an influence when it really comes to business, except for maybe some of the public policy associated with that, which we'll be talking about on this show. But, you know, nobody checks your ID when you go into Zapata's or Olive Garden to find out what state you live in before they offer to serve you business. And nobody cares, you know, essentially where the goods that they purchase and sell are from, unless they're low cost and high quality that they can provide their customers. So our job is to promote and defend the businesses of our community, help them grow and expand. And that's a pretty agnostic drill when it comes to the politics.
There is one major issue that is going to be coming up very soon, and that is the liquor petition on the Texas side to allow liquor sales over there. And, of course, the Arkansas side has fought this many times over the past years. That certainly has to be a concern, not only to the Chamber of Commerce, but to businesses on the Arkansas side of the city. I talked with one of the distributors in the area over the weekend, and they said that they have seen a significant downturn in their business because of the Nash tax that passed out there, because that business, the distributorship of that business, went to an out-of-city area, and that hurt the distributors in the local area tremendously.
Well, you know, the city of Texarkana, Texas has tried this before and failed. I'm not going to get out a crystal ball and try to predict what will happen. But what I have noticed in discussions with folks on both sides of the city over this issue is that there doesn't seem to be the alarmist fears that we've seen in the past. I think with Nash going wet for packaged liquor, and we've seen the market already start to move, there seems to be sort of a mood that this is just going to happen in Texas, and then the market dynamics will equilibrate to address the, you know, the overall fundamental market dynamics. Whether Arkansas will get hurt by this is hard to tell. If so, how much? Certainly, there'll be a convenience for consumers, an opportunity for new businesses in Texas. So, you know, how that balances out and what the taxpayers and consumers of our community think is the priority is going to shape out over the next few months. But I don't see necessarily the kind of real angst this time that we saw in the last couple attempts.
One of the issues that you are going to have to deal with and diplomatically deal with as the Chamber of Commerce president is you're going to have to deal with the fact that you've got so much more business on the Texas side than on the Arkansas side. The I-30 corridor is just about built out on the Texas side. How do you draw that into the Arkansas side now? How do you start that building across the other side of the state line? Because financially, it would seem to me to be a better deal tax-wise to do that,
well,
because of lower tax rates.
Speaking as, you know, speaking not as sort of a regional analyst, but kind of more parochially from the Texarkana Chamber of Commerce, the Texarkana Chamber of Commerce is really there to expand, retain and expand and defend the current businesses
sure,
and membership
sure,
in the community.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, what we're going to invest our resources and time in is figuring out how to drive new traffic into our businesses, create new customers for the companies that operate here in town. And then as a secondary role, we'll work on outside attraction. You know, there's a number of organizations, including Tex America mm-hmm. Center. The cities have economic developers. The regions in both Arkansas and Texas have regional economic developers. There's chambers of commerce all over the place, industrial parks, or commercial realtors, a plethora of individuals that are trying to attract business to Texarkana. So I think the chamber's role in that mission is really to help its partnership grow and expand.
Right.
And to be
you're the facilitator,
right? To be yeah. to be a place also where red flags can come up.
Sure.
So if we start to see trends in our partnership of trouble with workforce or trouble with certain economic indicators or problems with transportation,
mm-hmm.
we can begin to address those. So once they get here, we want to take care of them. We will have a role on outside creating primary job, you know, in a market and a climate for great business opportunity mm-hmm. Attraction here. But the initial focus of my presidency at the chamber is going to be to double down on our current businesses and make sure that they're taken care of.
And one of those business operations is, of course, the hotel motel industry, which has seen a fall off in their occupancy rate for several reasons. Do you see that, or have you seen that starting to come back yet?
Well, what's exciting from what I'm seeing is that the hotels and convention centers are really starting to see a marked increase in convention activity. We're working on several big conventions that have already announced for 2015 for Texarkana. The Arkansas side will be hosting the governor's conference on tourism. So 600 tourism-related folks are going to be in Texarkana, Arkansas, enjoying all the amenities that we have here in March of next year. And then later in the year, we have another big convention on the Texas side coming in, the Kiwanis, for the entire region, or having their regional convention here. So I'm excited about the fact that although we're still getting a lot of transient traffic come through the area because of the I-30 corridor, we're now becoming a magnet for tourism on a regional scale. And so I'm really looking forward to working with the convention centers and the other hospitality related industries to grow that part of our economy.
There is another issue that has just popped up here in the past, well, in the public's eye for the past month, although it's been going on behind the scenes now for about 6 months. But that is a new, potentially very big prison operation and building in the southern part of the state. Now, given the history the county had with prisoners, some would say, well, this could be another boondoggle. But this is a much different type of prison system that is being proposed for the area.
There's about seven counties in southwest Arkansas that have gotten together to address a statewide request for expressions of interest to build a 1,000 expandable to 2,000 bed maximum security prison. Now, this prison has not been appropriated. There hasn't been any effort by the state legislature yet to make sure that it'll get built. But it's really an interesting political phenomenon. Although they haven't generated the revenue for this prison yet, they've sent out a statewide request for expression of interest, which is kind of almost helping a grassroots movement to get it, to get a prison built. But Southwest Arkansas is very organized. The chamber's a partner in that effort to try to evaluate the feasibility, what the pros and cons of that would be. Really smart people looking at the opportunity. There are preliminary expressions of interest due, I believe, in October. But decisions will not be made until after the next legislative session in Arkansas, which starts in January, and we won't know anything until July.
Even if then, because they of course have to have the money. But as anybody who watches the news closely knows, the state of Arkansas is busting at the seams and has been for probably 20 years now. With the lack of state prison beds counties holding prisoners.
They have overcapacity issues. This is an attempt to address that. But, you know, the economic development driver for this is 300 to 400 stable quality jobs for our region. And no matter where they locate this this prison, if it comes to southwest Arkansas, anywhere in the seven county area, it'll be within commuting distance of the Texarkana region. And so that's one of the reasons why we're very supportive of it. It'll provide, you know, new residents and additional economic activity for our region.
Do you think that the Telford unit gives us a leg up in trying to attract something to this area, given the experience that Texarkana, Texas has had with it?
Well, I think that what Bowie County, Texas does and Cass County, Texas does actually in competing for this prison in southwest Arkansas is it'll help the state of Arkansas understand the qualified labor force and the education and training opportunities that we have for correctional folks and just the stout workforce we have. I mean, I think that's what Texas can bring to the mix is when we extend the geographic reach for potential employment base, we can make a very compelling argument about people qualified to do the work.
Another one of the huge issues that I think is going to be affecting especially the Arkansas side of the A&P tax rollback propositions. This has been a very controversial thing on the Arkansas side, and we don't have time to go into all the history of that. But a rollback there seems that might be detrimental to that side of the city.
Well, Steve, the facts are these. The city of Texarkana, Arkansas, collects approximately $1.4 million in what they call the hamburger tax, or the A&P tax. And then they take that money in and they distribute it back out
to various organizations
to promote the city, attract tourism, and that sort of thing. So, for example, Sparks in the Park that everybody enjoys, that's paid for with the A&P tax. Mm-hmm. So if you roll it back, you got to find out where you're going to get the money for things like subsidies for the Four States Fairgrounds, Sparks in the Park, all of Texarkana.
All of the arts.
All of the arts. Texarkana, Arkansas's entire Parks District is funded through the AMP tax. So the reality here is that the citizens of Texarkana, Arkansas are going to have a decision to make as to whether they want these types of amenities for their community and how they want them funded. Now, the hidden story here, of course, is that a significant portion of that $1.4 million, almost $400,000 to $500,000, has been pledged to support the convention center and the water park. And so many of the businesses that are currently collecting that AMP tax on behalf of the city are kind of concerned, I think, that money's being collected from their business and then it's going directly to support one other person's business. And that's really where the rub is here politically, and as more of this comes out, I think we'll see.
But the other rub on that is that when that deal was made, and I'm not talking just about one person on the Arkansas side, they were all involved in that when they got involved in that distribution. That was a guarantee.
It was.
To that park.
It was.
And if this rollback occurs and there's no money, it looks like to me the city's going to be on the hook for a lot of money, whether they like it or not.
Well,
there's going to be a lot of legal action taking place.
Well, that's right. And I have no idea and haven't had any discussions with anybody about how this will play out, but I'm certain we will hear more about this as
to be continued, that's right. Sure. Other headlines that you want to point out before we take a quick break?
No, Steve.
Oh, I know what I want to talk about. I forgot. Mark Bledsoe.
Right.
Has taken over as the new CEO and president of the United Way of Texarkana. Mary Worthington got a very nice promotion to Fayetteville, and she's up there now. Mark, of course, has been down with you for many years and looks like a great addition to the United Way.
Well, you know, it's really what I like to see about it, and I'm really, you know, grateful and proud for Mark that he gets to take over as the chief professional officer of the United Way. You know, it's such an important organization for our community. It really mobilizes the business and citizens to collect money for worthy causes as we invest in quality of life and to create a world-class climate for our citizens. And, you know, it's such an important role that he's going to play over there. But the other thing, Stephen, we talked about this last month, is it's nice to see that we have some succession planning within our region, that we're keeping the talent here in town, that our leadership, that we don't have to go outside the region to find top talent. And it's just nice to see are, you know, good people doing good in our community.
Yeah. And, you know, we've got to, we'll be watching, of course. Oh, I know you want to talk about one other issue, and this has to do with something we just started reporting on the last couple of weeks, and that's this new carbon tax, which is coming out of Washington, D.C. And there is a great deal of concern, especially among those power companies who depend on coal-fired power plants for their energy.
Steve, you know, this is a big issue.
It is, especially for consumers, and I don't think they realize how big an issue this can be.
They're going to figure it out when it hits their pocket.
It's kind of like the Bowie County tax situation.
Right. which another topic for another show.
Absolutely.
But the Obama administration's Environmental Protection Agency has issued new clean carbon plan, which sets new limits on coal-fired, particularly coal-fired power plants. And the AEP SWEPCO portfolio of power generation, including the power plant at Fulton, is heavily weighted toward coal. And so what this means for our area is really uncertain. But we know that there are going to be a number of communities, because of the way these rules are written, that are either going to have to invest literally billions nationally to upgrade this thing, or they're going to have to shut down. And that's going to create power shortage problems. If people are really more interested in learning about this, the Chamber of Commerce and AEP SWEPCO are sponsoring a leaders' luncheon on August 20th from 11:30 to 1 o'clock here at Texarkana College in the Truman Arnold Center. It's a $20 registration fee for chamber partners, $30 for non-partners. And if you email us at chamber@texarkana.org, you can get more information and come hear about this. This is something that I think is going to have major implications for our entire country and the business community.
And we'll be following that story as we go forward also. He's Bill Cork. I'm Steve Mitchell. This is the Texarkana Business Journal on KTXK Think Radio. We'll take a short break and we'll be come back. We're going to talk today with two superintendents of a couple of schools in the area. First, Dr. Todd Williams joins us from Pleasant Grove Independent School District here on the Texarkana Business Journal.
Choices when it comes to your future. Make the smart choice. At Texarkana College, learn from the best, build confidence, discover, learn a trade, or transfer to a university. Help others. Follow your passion. Make the smart choice. Texarkana College. Register now.
Programming this hour is made possible in part by a grant from Texamerica's Center, a local redevelopment authority near Texarkana, Texas, that is repurposing 12,000 acres of former military land and over 2 million square feet of buildings. Texamerica's Center boasts adaptable infrastructure and abundant resources and is home to 24 companies and growing. Information that will help grow your business can be found at texamericascenter.com or at 903-223-9841. Texamerica's Center, a supporter of KTXK Think Radio. Welcome back to the Texarkana Business Journal. I'm Steve Mitchell, and that is Bill Cork across the way, which you can't see because it's radio, but I'll tell you that he does sit across from me.
I am definitely here,
each
Steve.
Month on this program. We continue with our show this week, and we're going to talk about education with schools opening in the next couple, 3 weeks. Of course, a lot of in-service occurred this week and next week. Joining us today in this segment is Dr. Todd Williams, who has been a career educator for 29 years as a teacher, a coach, assistant principal, and now superintendent. He has been the superintendent at Pleasant Grove Independent School District for the past year and a half. He earned his bachelor's degree from Baylor University, master's from TAMU Commerce, and his doctorate in educational leadership from Tarlington State University. In addition to Pleasant Grove ISD, he has served as superintendent at Kaufman and Martins Mill ISD, married to his wife, Gwen, a computer science teacher at Pleasant Grove, and they have two children, and I understand he is now a new grandfather.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Williams, welcome to our microphone.
Glad to be here. Thank you all for having me.
You come into a situation with the first thing out of the bag, you've got to try to build a new school. And we're going to talk about that in a second, but I do want to start with where your year starts in September at Pleasant Grove, budget-wise and student-wise. What are you looking at?
Well, we're currently in development of our budget for the 14-15 school year. By law, we have to have last meeting to approve that budget. It'd be somewhere along August 28th or so. We've had several hearings during the month of June and July to let the board know kind of where we are financially. And it's not a pretty picture in Pleasant Grove. We're a property wealthy school district as declared by the Texas Education Agency. The way you derive that number is get all the property value in a school district divided by the number of students in that school district, and it gives you a number called the wealth per student. And ours is about $341,000 per kid. Anything north of 319.5, you're Chapter 41. And anything below 319.5, you're Chapter 42.
Known meaning as the Robin Hood plan.
Yes, sir. We're sending money back to the state, and that money is equally as all taken added together from all those Chapter 41s in the state, and then it's equally divided amongst the school districts who are Chapter 42s. We'll send back about $14,000 this year, $14,000, which is not a whole lot in the scheme of things, but it makes it problematic because I could certainly use that $14,000 this year in a lot of areas, and it's not being a superintendent of those other two school districts that you mentioned, Kaufman and Martins Mill, we were Chapter 42s there, meaning we got that excess money.
You benefited from the Robin Hood plan.
I certainly did, and it was a much better situation because it's very difficult to generate the kind of money that we need to sustain our program.
So you've seen it from both sides.
Seen it from both sides, and I like it better from the other side, I can promise you.
Todd, let me ask you, just in terms of the recent recent revenue trends for the district, your combination of all sources, Yeah. How has that been looking? Just kind of go back a couple of years. What's the trend line look like?
That is trending downward.
Okay. What percentage or so?
Well, if you take, we operate a $19 million annual budget. Of that $19 million, $12.5 to $13 million is generated in local M&O property taxes.
Maintenance and operations.
Maintenance and operate. That, you know, the mother load of the school district's money is generated locally.
Right.
In those other school districts, like, say, Kaufman, for instance, we had a $33 million annual budget. $25 to $26 million of that was sent to us from the state and federal sources. So, you know, it's just a different deal. You didn't have to come up with as much money locally as we do here. In Kaufman and Martins Mill, I always planned on about $6,000 in per kid per year in revenue to fund our programs. Here, I've had to adjust that number to $4,200 per kid per year, and that's about where we stand. So that number's been trending downward. About 4 years ago in the 2011 legislative session, right, that's when the legislature severely cut,
yes,
funding,
mm-hmm,
to public schools.
And colleges at the same time.
Exactly, mm-hmm, to really anything related to public education. And we took a $1 million hit in Kaufman at that time. Pleasant Grove,
wow,
at the same time took a $1 million hit. And I can tell you that $1 million in Pleasant Grove hurt a lot more than that $1 million.
So over the long term.
Yes, sir.
Describe for us and our listeners exactly, you know, you as trying to manage the assets and resources of the district and, mm-hmm, meeting all the requirements that you have to meet in compliance. Mm-hmm. Where do you find that money to cut? I mean, what are the things that go first in a situation?
Well, we try not to cut personnel, because when you cut personnel, you're cutting livelihoods. And, you know, you try not to do that if you can avoid it. Now, not replace people who resign or retire, you know, do it by attrition. That's a whole lot less painful. But you still got kids that are doing less, you know, or a school system that's functioning with less. And it impacts children. And so that resource we try to protect. You guys probably know on a school district's budget, it's the same with Paul Norton and them at TISD. 72% to 80% of any school district's budget is going to be wrapped up in salaries.
Mm-hmm. So retirement benefits, health benefits, the whole nine yards.
If you're going to really significantly impact that scenario, you got to do it through people. Well, we try to protect that to where we don't have to back off there. But if someone leaves and we don't have to replace them, we've done a lot of that this summer.
But the downside to that, Dr. Williams, is you end up packing classrooms.
Mm-hmm. We do. You end
and
up
the
with
the state
a,
law is what, 25?
It's 22 to
22,
1.
22, but you can get a waiver up to 25.
Well, it's 22 to 1 grades K through 4.
Okay, yeah.
If you can go higher than that in grades 5
right,
through 12,
right,
but you know, it's, you're getting on shaky ground when you do it. We all would agree that the lower student teacher ratio, the better the learning outcome.
Yeah, and I come from a family of teachers, and they say in K through 4, if you've got 22 students, you're getting nothing done.
Those
kids are not learning anything.
You're really not, and we're staring that in the face right now at Pleasant Grove because
you've got the same problem TISD does. You're busting at the seams.
And I found out this morning, and Paul, I don't know if you know about this, but you have to write a waiver for every one of those scenarios.
Yes,
you can't just write one waiver. It's got to be for every situation. And so it that becomes problematic because that's not what Pleasant Grove has stood for over the years. Our mission statement has been to educate kids to the best of our abilities and get them ready for what's going to happen after school. Well, you do that better with a smaller student-teacher ratio.
Mm-hmm.
Research I did for my doctorate said that when the 15th kid walks in the room, changes the dynamic.
Yes.
So optimum is 14 to 1.
Right.
But that's costly. And so
sure.
You're doing a lot of juggling. I tell you somewhere else where it hurts us, and Bill, I hate to speak directly to this, but Bill's wife works for us as an art teacher. Your fine arts programs start getting cut real quick because that's something
you don't have to have it as a core.
There you go. And STAR doesn't
right,
address it. So you tend to focus on those things that are going to keep you in a good accreditation
which
status.
I will argue the arts are almost as important as the core subjects. Because the arts actually give these students something they can pull on in their futures.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's why I've always been against the cutting of the arts at the, you know,
whatever level. Yeah, whatever level.
For whatever reason.
Kudos to Margaret Davis, my predecessor.
Yes.
She did a very good job, and she protected those programs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the people that lead us in those areas, Bill's wife, Nicole Briscoe, Charlotte Harris, Debbie Sutton are unbelievable employees and what they do. And, you know, we have to be careful because you do not want to impact that because that's a way of reaching kids. It's just like you can probably look at me and tell I've got an athletic background. Mm-hmm. Well, that was my outlet in school. Mm-hmm. But you have kids that are coming to school for those reasons too. And we've got to be sensitive to those kids and provide the resources and the opportunities for educational advancement that they need because I agree with you. If I had my way, I would require every student to learn how to play a musical instrument.
We did. When I was in high school, of course, you know, I'm in my 60s, so that was a long time ago. But
did they have musical instruments back then?
Yes, we actually went out and we got hides from the old cows.
You
know, we'd stretch them across the bone and we played on them. But it was a requirement. Not so much in junior and high school, but in elementary school, you had an hour of music every day, for whatever reason. Talk a little bit, if you would, Dr. Williams, about the makeup of your district now. Is it getting older? Why are you busting at the seams, does it seem?
Well, I don't know.
Or is it just aging facilities?
It's aging facilities. I don't know that we're so much busting at the seams. We've got a little capacity, but it's rapidly being used up. Our enrollment is trending upward too, not as quickly as TISD's, but it is moving upward. We tend to – our facility, especially our elementary facility, is very old. We, as you know, our bond election failed back in May, and, you know, we'll have to back up and kind of address some of those issues as we go forward. But that's really our issue is aging facilities. The other three campuses are in pretty good shape. But that one, you know, when you got an elementary school that part of it was originally built in 1956, I think it's time.
Todd, you know, we've talked a lot about the financial performance metrics going on in the district right now, but you know, ultimately, the real performance metrics is the learning that's going on in the classroom and the success of the students there. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about those business metrics in the business of education and how Pleasant Grove stacks up?
Well, that was one of the things that attracted me to this school district because, you know, as an educator, when you boil it all down to it, it basically comes down to our kids learning. And you can take all the extracurricular activities and throw all that out the window. It comes down to our kids progressing from one year to the next to get to that ultimate goal of a high school graduation, walking across that stage after their senior year. And are they ready for college or some kind of job in the business world to where they can be successful and they can have a quality of life that, you know, most of us enjoy? That's never really – that was one of the things that attracted me to it. I don't think it's been an issue in Pleasant Grove because that commitment has always been there. And very comfortable with that. I like to be around those kind of activities where that is stressed. You have a lot of parental involvement to make sure the school district is doing what it's supposed to be doing. And the expectation there is that we're all about learning. And I like that. That's the way it should be. If it ever gets out of the – you know, if you ever got where the dog – the cart's before the dog, then you've got a severe problem. And I've worked in school districts where they pay lip service to that education part. They're really there for the extracurricular. In Pleasant Grove, it's not that way. It's the main thing is the main thing, and they're all about the education, and I like that because that's the way it should be.
And I just, you know, I know you mentioned the art excellence from the art program, and just to kind of put a plug in for my wife, because if I don't ask you a question about this now that you've raised her in this interview, you know, the art program at Pleasant Grove is outstanding.
It is.
Both the theater and art program, state-ranked. Under the state VACE program, for example, the fine arts program is probably the top award-winning art program in the entire state of Texas.
That's exactly right.
These are gifts that this community has for students that want a creative outlet. They have the best high school in the state of Texas to pursue art education. Yeah. So, you know, these are the kind of things that as we talk about budget and the business of schools, we really need to make sure we don't sacrifice some of our brightest gems. So there you go, honey. I made a pitch to your boss.
Well, and it like I said, you can't – you just got to be sensitive to that because that's a pull on that budget development. And you know, you're fighting every way you can. So, like I said, we try to focus when we're developing budgets, focus on resources that we can do without that we might could be able to replace next year. One thing that I've got my fingers crossed on is the legislature next spring will do the right thing,
right,
because they're going to have an opportunity. I feel like Judge Deitch is going to probably rule in our favor, in the favor of the mm-hmm. public school systems. Mm-hmm. And then
we're talking about the cuts that were made in 2011.
Yes, well, and the current, the ongoing litigation,
right,
that lawsuit between the schools and the Attorney General's
concerning
office.
The funding, yeah.
And I think probably what will happen, I'm hoping that for a favorable outcome to the public schools, after which that decision will be appealed to the Texas Supreme Court. And in the meantime, the legislature will have an opportunity to address that. And as you both know, they will only pick up the funding question when they've got a gun held to their head, mm-hmm. meaning they've got to do something about it. And I think they're going to have that opportunity. I'll be honest with you, if they could just I'm not asking for the whole million back that we lost in 2011. Just give me half of that.
Half of it.
If I had half of it, I could balance our budget right now and put $150,000 in fund balance.
Dr. Todd Williams is the superintendent at Pleasant Grove Independent School District. Bill Cork is my co-host. I'm Steve Mitchell, and this is the Texarkana Business Journal on KTXK Think Radio. Dr. Williams, I want to talk about the failed tax levy election that you had to build a new elementary school, the mm-hmm. one you were talking about out on Richmond Road. You've had time to analyze that now. What do you think happened?
Well,
because it's obvious you need one.
Right. I don't think anybody's debating that point, that the building is old and decrepit and there's only so much lipstick we can put on that pig.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make a change. I think it was a combination of several factors that came together at the same time. I think I really think that the location was a bit of an issue. I think that there were some legitimate concerns placed before the board, and you know, we had to think about it. Albeit with that there, we still it's an excellent location. You know, I like the prominence of it. We wanted to put a facility out there that people would attract people.
We're talking about Bringle Lake now.
Yes, sir. That 17 acres out there, just across from the Texarkana Golf Ranch, basically mm-hmm. is where it sits, mm-hmm. and still feel like that's a good location. But I do think that was a little bit of a hang up for some people. The 2 cent tax increase, I think, was a little problematic for some people because our tax rate is kind of high. You know, for a Chapter 41, a property wealthy school district, the thing that people don't realize is your INS rate is going to be higher in that scenario because that money that on the INS side, that
that's
money—
That's interest in sinking. That's
yes,
what you pay back your
pay
debt
your
on.
Bonds.
Right, right.
And that money for Chapter 41 does not go back to Austin.
Right.
It stays in the school district, which means when you go through a Chapter 41 school district, their facilities are going to be nicer because it shows up in sticks and bricks, and that money stays local. So, you know, I think that was a little bit of an issue. I honestly think that our over 65 voters did not believe that their taxes were frozen either. Mm-hmm. I've heard that comment from several people, and they just didn't trust the system. And so we didn't do a good job of getting that word out there. And then, honestly, the biggest reason I think was apathy. I think people, I heard it. I showed up at First Baptist Church the next day, and if I heard this comment once, I must have heard it 10 or 15 times. Dr. Williams, we just assumed it was going to pass, so we didn't even bother to go vote. Mm-hmm. Consequently, we lost by 39 votes. You know, if 20 more people vote for it, we would have won by one. You know, it was that close. So I know it's an issue, and I think the board's got to back up and take a look at all the dynamics of that election and what went on. Because it, you know, who lost here? I didn't lose. You didn't lose. Nobody in this room lost. Those kids,
the kids lost. Yeah. But what are your options? I mean, you have Bringle Lake or Richmond Road. You know, those are the only two options you have for new elementary.
No, we actually evaluated 12 different
locations
mm-hmm. when we went through this process, and the board did their due diligence on that. Mm-hmm. We contacted our architects, had them come up, look at all the 12 parcels of land that were available. Had them evaluate those, and the Bringle Lake location came to the top of the list. It went to the top,
right,
because of a lot of things. There's a lot of things that are appealing about that location, but there are some other possibilities that, and I don't know if the board will consider those. It just remains to be seen. I think they are, you know, like everybody else, you just need to just need to be thorough in your research on how you go about deciding the next date for the election, and I know that we will do that.
And so, when do you think they're going to try this again?
I think in all reality, realistically, we're looking at probably May of 2015.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot going on this fall, so probably better to duck this time.
We feel like it's best. That would give us time to consider all the options that are out there, and get some more input from our community. I think I can see that happening, where we open up a community meeting and talk to people and get their input on what they would like to see us do, because a lot of people talking about this thing, and my concern is those children. They go to school every day in a building that's a lot less nice than the office I work in. And it shouldn't be that way. It should be just the opposite. I should be working in the facility they're going to school in, and they should get the nicer facility.
Well, it sounds like you'll have about another 10 months to make the case. Dr. Todd right. Williams, we thank you very much for joining us today on the Texarkana Business Journal.
Bill, thanks for having me, and we really appreciate the opportunity to come on and play up our programs.
And we'll be back with Paul Norton, who is the superintendent at TISD. I'm Steve Mitchell. He's Bill Cork, and this is the Texarkana Business Journal on KTXK Think Radio. Programming this hour is made possible in part by a grant from Tex-America Center, a local redevelopment authority near Texarkana, Texas, that is repurposing 12,000 acres of former military land and over 2 million square feet of buildings. Tex-America Center boasts adaptable infrastructure and abundant resources and is home to 24 companies and growing. Information that will help grow your business can be found at texamericacenter.com or at 903-223-9841. Tex-America Center, a supporter of KTXK Think Radio.
You have choices when it comes to your future. Make the smart choice. At Texarkana College, learn from the best. Build confidence. Discover. Learn a trade. Or transfer to a university. Help others. Follow your passion. Make the smart choice. Texarkana College. Register now.
Welcome back on this edition of the Texarkana Business Journal. I'm Steve Mitchell. Bill Cork joins me each month, who is the CEO of the Texarkana Chamber of Commerce. And joining us now is Paul Norton, the superintendent of TISD, as we are focusing on education in this month's edition of the Texarkana Business Journal. We just heard from Dr. Todd Williams, the superintendent of Pleasant Grove Independent School District. And now Paul Norton joins us, who graduated from Pleasant Grove High School. He holds a Bachelor of Science Biology degree from Texas Tech University, as well as a Master's of Science in Education degree from TAMUT, with a principal of superintendent certification. He began his career in 1996 as a teacher and coach at Pleasant Grove Middle School. From there, he moved to teacher and coach at Pleasant Grove High School, followed by an assistant principalship at PGHS. He came to TISD in 2001 as an associate principal of Texas High, and was named principal in Texas at Texas High School in 2003 until 2011, when he was named the superintendent when James Henry Russell became the president of Texarkana College. He is married to his wife, Holly. They have three children. And Paul Norton, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for the opportunity
to be
here.
Good to see you again.
Welcome. Yes, sir. Thank you all very much.
And let's talk. We're talking about education in this show today. You also have population problems, good problems, but you are busting at the seams.
We are busting
at
the seams.
You.
Yes, we are. We've been growing every year since 2001. Last year, we had 7,243 students enrolled in TISD, and this year we anticipate to be over 7,300 students.
Now, am I correct in understanding that you're at 110% at some of your campuses?
Our elementary campuses are at 99% capacity when you look at them on the whole. You look at Texas Middle School, we are at 114% of capacity.
Wow.
And at Texas High, we're actually at 112% of capacity. And so we do have some capacity issues. We tried the bond issue in 2010. That did not pass. Since that point, we're 450 students more than we were in 2010. So the problem hasn't seceded. It's still there. And so we need to find a way to meet the needs of our kids.
Hey, Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank
Question
you.
For you with this growth in your student enrollment. Where are these people coming from? What kind of feedback are you getting? Is it new people moving into our area? Is it just a baby boomer going through? Where are all these kids coming
from? We're getting people from all over the place. TISD is an open enrollment district, and so we take students that live in our district as well as students that live outside of our district. And so we have seen a slight increase in our transfer enrollment, but not that matches our growth. And so apparently there's a lot of people living in TISD, moving into TISD, moving in the city of Texarkana. You know, a lot of the demographic charts that you look at show slow growth, but we've seen slow, steady growth and then peaks at certain times. And so we have about 1,300 students that transfer into TISD from outside of the district, which is a huge benefit to us. Some people like to say that if you would get rid of the transfers, then you would solve your problems. And facility-wise, that's true. We would have plenty of room for the students to have room in TISD, but there's the added value that our transfers bring to the table. Every transfer brings in state funding. That state funding provides additional programs that we're able to provide our in-district students. So, for example, a student that comes in from a neighboring district that generates a little over $5,000 worth of funding for us. That costs us about $3,000 to educate that child. So each new student that comes in as a transfer student generates about $2,000 that we're able to use towards the benefit of those students as well as our in-district students. And so, you know, the big misnomer is that you have all these extra kids coming in that are increasing our debt. Well, our transfer students that come in, they generate more funds than the debt we pay out each year. And so when you look at it through a different lens and see the benefit that those kids come with, then it is a benefit of TISD.
Well, you've got the financial benefits you've just pointed out, but it's also a function of demand. I mean, people wouldn't be coming if they didn't think they were getting a high-quality education at the Texas Independent School District. Talk a little bit before we get into the budget and numbers and construction. Tell us a little bit about what's going on there in terms of your recognition and the kind of programs that you've just been referring to.
The academic programs at TISD are outstanding. This past year alone, we had the Teacher for the Year for the entire state of Texas, Ms. Monica Washington.
Yeah, great for her.
She is an amazing lady. We hired her about 7 years ago at Texas High, coming from Memphis. Her and her husband teaches at the middle school. Dynamic duo.
Was he jealous when she got the award and he did?
He's just as deserving as she
okay.
is. And she would tell you the same thing.
Well,
he's very proud of his wife.
And, I'm
and
sure
should
he
be,
is.
As we all are. And we had the Technology Specialist of the Year for the state of Texas in TISD this past year. Huge bright star for us is our STEM Academy. We received the national recognition in STEM leadership this year. Rhonda Jameson, who is our STEM coordinator, She does an amazing job, and she went to a conference in Washington and received the STEM Leadership Award from this organization for the United States, and very proud. We have lots of organizations and different school districts that come to Texarkana to tour our facilities, to look at our programs. I would guess we have from 30 different states. We had our first international visit this past year. We had visitors from Taiwan that came and toured Morris Elementary because they're wanting to start STEM education in Taiwan. And so they came into Dallas to the group that we work with, Educate Texas, and said, we want to hit a couple of schools in Texas and see what we can do. The first school they visited was Morris.
Paul, let's talk a little bit about that STEM education emphasis. And it's not to shortchange the other great programs that you have at TISD, but it happens to be one I'm personally passionate about, because when we talk about workforce development, we know our nation has a deficiency in math and science and engineering and computers. And this program, which really starts obviously from pre-K all the way through the educational opportunities in our local university, Talk a little bit of how you constructed that, a little bit of the background there, and what's the goal for the program for our region?
This program has been in place since 2006, and it started with the vision when Dr. Hensley was at A&M Texarkana, Dr. Sullivan was in TISD, and I believe Frank Coleman was here at Texarkana College. And what can we do to generate interest? What is something that we can bring to Texarkana to make a significant impact to benefit not only the school district, the college, and the university, but also the region as a whole? And so a lot of brainstorming went on. The idea of STEM came to the table, met with a lot of different engineers in a lot of different capacities, and said, if we develop this program, what would it look like? What would be the benefit? And what would you need from a school system starting in kindergarten going through 16? So we started the whole Pre-K-16 initiative of how do we get engineers coming out of our region, our area. And through that, we started the Ross Perot STEM Academy at Texas High. We started the STEM Academy at the middle school, and then Morris Elementary opened. And when all that came together and happened, it truly produced magic for the area, for TISD, because we had something that we knew would benefit us.
And Texas A&M University, Texarkana, just hired a new dean of the STEM program. I met him for the first time last night. I hope we get to have him in on the show because he is a really dynamic and outstanding guy who's going to really complement some of the higher ed.
Well, we're excited, very excited about this new addition at A&M Texarkana. Dr. Lincolns did a great job when he was at A&M Texarkana, but Dr. Peterson coming in and bringing in a new perspective and different ideas. It's great being able to generate from within, but sometimes you need that outside force to come in and make you think about things a little bit different. And I'm excited about the partnership continuing with A&M Texarkana to make sure that the STEM continues to grow as well as other areas within the school district.
Paul, you have so many good things going at TISD, but I do want to touch on a subject that has become very touchy, especially for teachers, not only statewide, but nationwide. And that has to do with teacher appraisals.
Yes.
You know, rating a teacher, whether or not they can teach in the classroom. Morris Elementary is going to be one of those testing programs.
Yes.
First, how has that been accepted by the district and by the teachers there? And is it the thought that this is a worthwhile program overall? Or does it still have a lot of controversy to it?
Well, there's not a lot of controversy to it. There's a lot of question marks surrounding it.
How do you do it?
Because nobody really understands what the purpose is, where we're going. This is something that is just new for this year. So there's not a big understanding about it because we're just now getting the communication
right.
pieces out. The state asked for districts in each region across the state to volunteer to do this. We volunteered because we like to be on the inside and knowing mm-hmm. what's coming down the trail. And so we volunteered for Morris Campus to do that. What we know right now is that teacher appraisals will consist, student growth will consist of 20% of teacher appraisals mm-hmm. in this new appraisal system.
Right.
Now, we did all this back in June, and as the summer's gone on, we've learned that the 20% won't be in this model schedule that we have for this coming mm-hmm. year. So really, there's not a whole lot of benefit this coming school year.
Right.
Because we wanted to see how the progress measure was going to be calculated, how it was going to be involved, and the true impact it was going to have on our teaching staff. And by doing it at one campus, you got a test model there, and you didn't just automatically infiltrate it with all of your campuses and all of your teachers.
Now, we want to make clear that this is a test campus. Nothing permanent comes out of this. This is just to kind of get diagnosed and see how this might work if it's ever implemented on a statewide schedule.
The state has been moving towards this for several years now, from DATE grants back in the early 2000s through different things to measure student progress mm-hmm. and then how you evaluate teachers based on the student progress during that school year. And it's a very, very fair model to use as long as you have all the parameters in place to make sure that it accommodates for a lot of special needs kids. It accommodates because the last thing you want is a teacher saying, I don't want that kid in my class because I don't think they can make a year's growth. And there's no worse comment that can come from an educator's mouth of saying that kid can't grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're doing this at the state level to see how the dynamics of this work when it's actually put in place. And so we were excited about being a part of that pilot program. We're not going to have the involvement that we wanted because of some changes that have been made by Texas Education Agency this summer, but we're still going to be involved in that process. Our principal and one of the teachers from the campus went to a training this summer. They came back very excited and very positive about the model, see the value in it. But anytime you get something from the state agency, you step carefully as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We don't want to just throw everybody in at one time. We want to ease into this process and then see what we can do as a district, as well as our individual campuses, to make this a smooth transition for all of our staff.
The legislature will be meeting in January.
Yes.
First, what are you excited about, and what scares you most about this upcoming session?
I'm excited about the changes that were made this last session with House Bill 5 for the graduation plans and how it opened up a lot of opportunities. What scares me is that in this legislative session, they'll make adjustments to that. Any time they meet in Austin, you get worried about what's going to happen. The funding issue is a big question. How is that going to work out when you see funding that's been cut? In 2011, we took $3.1 million worth of cuts in funding. We've gotten a little bit of that back this last legislative session, but we're nowhere near where we were before. And so we want to make sure that we're continuing to find ways to generate funds to keep here locally, making sure that we're pushing our legislators and senators to making sure that they see the need and the value of funding for education. But the House Bill 5 is huge, and we want to make sure that we continue that push and provide that wealth of opportunities for our kids, because a kid's not going to fit in a box anymore. We want to make sure that we want them have lots of opportunities. We were talking earlier about the arts and all those things. We've developed a new Ideas Academy at our middle school, Innovative Design and Exploration of the Arts, that brings in a lot of the arts.
Is this kind of like Odyssey of the Mind was many years ago, where they develop new ideas and kind of think out of the box and that kind of thing?
It's not so much that way. It's a need that we saw that we needed to fit. With technology continuing to be a major push, with the creation of House Bill 5, we could incorporate a lot of the arts in with technology. And so it's going to take on video, gaming, design, coding, all the things that animation, all the kid things that kids love and enjoy, and how do you make a career out of that? And it doesn't really take out of the box. It gives you a new way of thinking about things.
Sure.
We're preparing kids for a workforce that we don't know what's going to exist.
100
years
clue.
Ago, we knew what we were preparing kids for. Those jobs don't even
exist. The manufacturing jobs.
So we have to teach kids how to think, and the STEM program and the Ideas Academy tie right in line with that.
Exciting stuff, Paul. Let's talk a little bit about the financial business of the district right now. You had mentioned on background for this interview that you had about a $59 million budget approved on July 1st with a $3,000 surplus. But you also just mentioned that, you know, this is you're delivering a $59 million budget in spite of $3 million recently in state cuts. That's a pretty significant chunk. So how do you manage the budget? How are you focusing your priorities? What are some of the things you think about as a leader of the district to get you where you need to go educationally?
Well, you have to make the main thing the main thing. And it's an old cliche, but what is the most important thing? What do we want to focus on? What is our priority? And we list out our priorities. We want to make sure that academics comes first. You talk about TISD is very well known for our extracurricular programs and athletic events, but you look at our senior class that just graduated, $15.4 million worth of scholarship opportunities, a kid going to Stanford, another kid going to Harvard, another kid going to the Honors Business College at the University of Texas, kids getting accepted into Vanderbilt, going all over from the West Coast to the East Coast. That shows me that our academics are where they need to be. The $15.4 million tells me that colleges and universities are reaching out to Texas High graduates. They want our kids. They don't offer scholarships to kids based on all these random things. There's a lot that goes into a kid filling out an application for a college, getting recognized for a scholarship. Three kids going to the Naval Academy, another one going to the Army. Lots of opportunities for our kids. And that tells me that our priorities are where they need to be, on the academic side of progressing our kids. The growth model continues to show to show that it's going to be pushed at the state level. So how do we keep making sure that our kids are growing a year at a time?
Is that part of the reason why you're busting at the seams?
It is a reason why we're busting at our seams. You know, Todd earlier talked about finding that hook in that niche. Some of our kids, that hook is athletics, that hook is band, that hook is art, the hook is whatever, chess club. Maybe the hook is they get two warm meals. But our job as educators is, when we have that hook, to pull them in and show them all these other things that are happening.
Let's talk a little bit about the capital bond referendum. You've talked about bursting at the seams, but you have proposed, recently announced, and you're going to be working with your your board on a $28 or $29 million capital bond program. Tell us a little bit about that.
We had community meetings a couple weeks ago to get input from the community on what our needs are facility-wise. We went through a strategic planning process that started in September and went through April this past school year, and part of that is how do we alleviate the crowding at our campuses. I talked about the numbers a minute ago. Elementaries are at 99%, middle school is 114%, Texas High School is 112%. So the proposal that came back from the strategic planning team was we need a new elementary school, preferably on the west end of our district to deal with the growth, because as Texarkana continues to move west, and that's where the development land is in TISD, that's where our next campus needs to be. The middle school being 114% capacity, we need to develop a sixth grade center. We have sixth grade, seventh grade, and eighth grade at Texas Middle School. Developing a sixth grade center makes sense because those are our youngest kids. The kids that are transitioning from our eight elementary schools coming together for the first time at the sixth grade center, it would basically be a school within a school. They would have their own cafeteria. The only thing that they would go to the existing middle school for, it would be for gym use. We wouldn't replicate a gym. But all these things would lower class sizes. We would still have the programs and opportunities for all the kids at the elementary level as well as the sixth grade level, but it would give us space to grow.
So if we own a house in TISD, what kind of impact is it going to hit us?
It looks like it's going to be about a 9-cent tax increase. So on a $100,000 home, if you take the $15,000 homestead exemption, then you're looking at about $76 a year or $6.38 a month.
Paul Norton, superintendent of the Texas Independent School District, thank you so much for joining us on the Texarkana Business Journal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Steve.
Paul, have a good year.
Thank you, too.
And that's the end of our show today. We've got just enough time to tell you that Bill Cork is the CEO and president of the Chamber of Commerce in Texarkana. And, of course, I work here at KTXK Think Radio. Bill, good to see you again. And we'll look forward to next month on the Business Journal when we'll discuss more about business and maybe some more about education in the area. Thanks for joining me.
It's always great to be here with you, Steve. And, of course, our listeners can always listen to this, a replay of this, archived on our blog, TexarkanaBusinessJournal.org, or at KTXK Think Radio for the Arklatex, 91.5 FM, and at KTXK.org.
Thank you, Bill. And we'll see you again next month on another edition of the Texarkana Business Journal here on KTXK. I'm Steve Mitchell. Have a good day, everyone. You've been listening to the Texarkana Business Journal, a monthly look at and promotion of businesses and the individuals who make them part of the vibrant Texarkana community. The Texarkana Business Journal is recorded in the studios of KTXK-FM with post-production work by Steve Mitchell. Listen to today's program anytime at TexarkanaBusinessJournal.org or online at KTXK.org. Join us again next month for another Texarkana Business Journal on KTXK 91.5 FM Think Radio.